Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Arb Life Podcast. Today I'm joined by the always charming Taylor Hamill of DMM as we talk about some different applications of rigging plates in the field of arboriculture. All right, I got the recorder going, man. I know you're very busy over the last couple weeks, and I really appreciate you staying persistent and getting in touch with me, man. Welcome again to the Arb Life.
Yeah, man, no worries. The Wi-Fi here is a little spotty, so we might cut out a little bit, but we'll do our best.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. So I'll get right into it. Basically, I'd like to have a discussion, Taylor, about rigging plates and some basic applications, some basic arborist applications in the field. And I know that in the message the other day, I sort of touched on the basic concept of the rigging plate, and I think that that's a good starting point. And I sort of have the question for you is, what is it that makes a rigging plate? What defines it? Because I know that there's a lot of different designs, a lot of different sizes, a lot of different shapes. But if we can just talk about the basic concept of a rigging plate and what it is and how it functions.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's funny. Leading up to this, I typed in rigging plate, you know, or tried to define rigging plate in the dictionary, and it doesn't exist. So it's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, you might think, well, a rigging plate is a piece of steel or aluminum with some holes in it. but actually, you know, I mean, probably the most basic rigging plate would just be a ring,
right?
You know, an anchor ring or something, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's a place to collect items. I guess you could maybe say a master link or a platform for various connections to meet. So it doesn't necessarily have to have individual slots or holes or anything, but it just needs to be able to accommodate, I guess, more than one piece of connection, you know, what be it a carabiner or other connector or a piece of rope or sling or something.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I really like the concept of collecting gear. I sort of have the ideas of organization and balance as well, depending on the application. And I'd like to say that that's a good segue into, I think, how arborists use rigging plates. And I'll mention the really common ways that I see them used. And I think it's an evolution, too, as to how we're applying the rigging plate in either climbing systems or rigging systems. But, you know, when I think of the rigging plate, I always think of speed lining systems, you know, multiple slings, multiple limbs, you know, especially on conifer removals. I know it's a pretty popular technique. And then I think of a master point, like you said, or a master link in a static pool system as a way to build mechanical advantage or to build a balanced floating anchor in between two available anchors. And then the third way I think of the rigging plate, and then I think it's unique, and you can speak to this really well, is how it seems to be integrating itself onto other items of gear. And, you know, talk about the hitch climber pulley. I mean, what a seems such a simple piece of gear, but really a revolutionary design item when you talk about combining the basic tool of the pulley and then the idea of the rigging plate. So those are the three areas of application that I would, if we could talk about that, and maybe you can share some of your insight into your favorite ways that you like to apply the rigging plate in the systems that you build as an arborist.
Yeah, sure. the run me past those again. Give me the first situation that you were talking about.
So, speed lining or like a compound system where you're setting up like a knotless rigging with multiple slings and multiple limbs. Trolleying limbs over a garden, over a target, that sort of rigging situation. And then also in just a basic, like a static pool, floating anchor system. Those are the two ideas that most readily come to my mind when I'm always thinking about pulling that rigging plate out of the bag.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, if you think about the first example, like a speed line, you've got potentially many connections that need to happen, that need to sort of be centralized in one location. So a rigging plate is a great way to organize those attachments, and also potentially, depending on how many there are, you know, keep them separated, as it were, or, you know, keep them oriented correctly. A configuration type thing.
Right.
Coming back to really the simplest rigging plate would be an aluminum ring or a steel ring, whatever. So you can get many connections into a ring. And as long as you manage that, that's fine. You know, there's certainly, I guess I want to make a small, well, maybe the segue can happen later, but, you know, there's certainly an advantage to having separate slots or separate attachment points that keep carabiners away from each other. But at the same time, I think it's perfectly fine to use a ring, for example, that doesn't necessarily keep the carabiners from clashing, but depending on how you load it and how the operation is going, a ring might be perfectly acceptable for that.
Right.
But in a speedline example where perhaps you have the top line or the speed line, if you want to call it that, and you've got one or maybe two control lines, plus you've got multiple attachment points for limbs underneath it, then certainly it makes sense to use a plate that has separate slots or separate holes in it.
Right.
To keep all that stuff organized. And even then, depending on the sort of dynamic loading that's going in, or if the speed line happens to be moving through a canopy, you've got other parts of the tree, branches and things interfering with it, as it were. It's nice to be to try to maintain that correct configuration of those carabiners.
Right.
So,
well, and you know, I guess I never really thought of it like this, but when you mention, you know, the simplicity of the ring, my mind immediately goes to the design of the hub and how it's, you know, I guess a rigging plate such as, you know, a paw or something like that, a flat piece of steel. But then the hubs sort of take that that ring design and then also include the feature of separate slots. And I guess the idea I have, or this notion that I have, that it's really about depending on the dynamic situation that you're dealing with, that will almost be or needs to be replicated in the tools that you're using. So the more, you know, the more demands for different items of gear, maybe the more demands that the rigging plate be a little more elaborate and have a little, you know, maybe more design features incorporated in it to deal with those situations.
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, where the hubs, you know, the DMM hubs come into play, I guess there's the element of a running rope through the center aperture.
Right.
You know, we've increased the diameter a bit. And yeah, it's interesting to have these sort of concentric areas, as it were, where connections can happen, and also rope can be run at the same time, even. So,
right.
Yeah, that's interesting, and also the ability to connect either textiles or hardware. So you can use a steel or aluminum connector, carabiner, shackle, whatever you want to use, or also, tie a rope directly into it. That's also a benefit. And that's not just isolated or to the hubs. I mean, you can do that with other rigging plates as well. But yeah, I think that's an important element, particularly in the tree care world where we have a lot of movement and, a lot of chance for misconfiguration. So it's nice to be able to connect directly with a textile and not worry about the misconfiguration of a carabiner.
Yeah, that's actually a great point is, the make of the specific item, whatever the material is, whether it be aluminum or steel, and its compatibility with the different the other items in a rigging system, whether it be a running rope or a webbing sling or something of that nature. So to keep the idea of compatibility with different system items is another great consideration to have when thinking about which rigging plate you're going to choose for which application. I mean, it seems as though the more well-rounded something is, the more applicable it could be, but that's not necessarily the case, especially in situations where you may be generating really big loads at that point where the rigging plate is employed in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that really covers also the situation of a static pool or, even the idea of a floating anchor, in the sense that everything needs to be compatible and balanced. So what I want to talk about now is the idea of the rigging plate or the concept, that philosophy of the plate making its way onto or in combination with other pieces of gear. It seems as though the plate itself is coming onto the scene, and I've seen it on bridge swivels, with the DMM hitch climber pulley. I think that was sort of a really breakthrough in this idea of fusing different gear features or different applications of gear into one unit. Can you talk about that a little bit from a application standpoint, what that does for the rigging arborist or the climber, or what kind of opportunities it may open up for either work positioning or rigging?
Sure. If I may just take one step back to your fixed point
absolutely
topic, building a mechanical advantage or something like that, the beauty of a rigging plate in that scenario is the ability to connect additional components to the plate while it's under load.
Oh, wow. Great point.
Yeah.
And that would be in that static pool scenario or like working off of a floating anchor that's been established. So being able to have the opportunity to put different components on, whether it's a pulley or a progress capture in any sense, you can actually build it into the system while being under load.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Well, for example, if it were just a soft link or an eye splice or something that you were connecting into, once that comes under load, it's difficult to get other pieces in there.
Right.
And of course, if with an eye splice, you're sort of jamming carabiners together and they're grinding and all of that. But, so yeah, that's an interesting, look at it as well.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Something that I didn't really consider is, your ability to, maybe not necessarily change a system, but add to it or, improve on it while it's actually functioning in the field. And this is something that the rigging plate offers to the arborist. And that's a really good, that's great insight to have. But yeah, I don't know. I always think of the hitch climber pulley itself, and you know, I guess when I first started using the hitch climber pulley, I didn't think of it as a rigging plate, or I didn't really think of it as having the features of a rigging plate, and I don't know why, but essentially, you know, that three hole system that's integrated onto the pulley, and then the swinging plates sort of have this, definitely have a feel of a block, you know, blocks sort of feel to it, like the rigging blocks that we use and those swinging cheek plates. So it's interesting, the combination of features that we see in tool development or whatever. But if we can specifically talk about the integration of the plate itself onto other items of gear, I'd like to hear your take on it, and you know, a little bit of your fancy around that topic.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, really, the hitch climber, if you want to look at it as a platform to build a system from, you know, a climbing system, it gets consolidating components, and also providing other functions as well, like a slack tending pulley in the case of, you know, the hitch climber, you know, in quotes, you know, the hitch climber, right, climbing system,
right,
you know, the CE climb or whatever you want to say. That's so you've got a carabiner connection to the ring or the swivel on your harness, which the ring and the swivel, if we look at a standard, you know, pretty typical harness configuration, you've got a ring or a swivel on your bridge, and both of those are also master links and rigging plates in themselves. You know, a swivel is a great example of a rigging plate.
Right.
So you've got a carabiner connected to that master link, and that carabiner is also connected to the hitch climber pulley, which we could call a master link as well. You know, or just an area of consolidation. So, and at the same time, we've got the slack tending pulley, as it were, in that configuration. So, yeah, very, very unique product in that, right?
Right.
And also on its own, like, let's take it out of the climbing system, as it were, and use it in a rescue situation where we need multiple attachment points, and we've got a running rope over the pulley where we're creating mechanical advantage.
Right.
You know, so... So that as well, that pulley plus, you know, in quotes again, rigging plate, you know, the idea of a rigging plate, I think for all of us is a, you know, a flat piece of aluminum or steel with holes in it. You know,
right.
That doesn't necessarily need to be the case, but yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because, just after, reflecting on what we've talked about already, I'm also sort of I have this notion in my mind of now, after having this conversation, of the rigging plate as, you know, multifunctional or multi-use, in the sense of it's a floating anchor, it's a progress capture, you know, multiple points of attachment. So it really, in that sense, it wears a lot of different hats. And I think that when you talk about it as a platform, I think that is a great way to describe a plate, because you really are attaching multiple systems or different functioning tools to one point that's really carrying the weight of all of those different things that are interacting in a given situation. So to think of it as a platform, I think is really awesome, an awesome philosophy to have of the rigging plate, and that's really cool insight to share.
Mm-hmm.
So any closing thoughts or comments or things that you wanted to say in closing that you didn't get to mention, Taylor?
Let me look here. I wrote a few notes. I had some comments about, rescue, rigging.
If you could talk a little bit more about rescue, because I think that, that's a great topic with the sort of the competition season coming up. I think a lot of climbers are getting into aerial rescue mode and thinking about different ideas that they can use gear to employ different ways to get people out of the tree. So yeah, talk a little bit more about rescue.
Yeah, well, I probably should have kept my mouth shut because I was actually
you could have went
talking about technical rescue things, putting people on a stretcher and lifting them up with a helicopter.
No, get it. No, get it. Go. Get it out in the open, man. Get it out there.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. Well, if you look at, I'm going to do a shameless plug here, but if you look at the bat plates, right?
Okay.
The bat plates, we have four different sizes. And this actually leads me into what I wanted to talk about in terms of using, rigging plates. The bat plate extra small, I seem to see that on a lot of harness bridges.
Right.
And, I'd like maybe to finish up with that.
But, absolutely.
In terms of our bat plates, they're very, compact in terms of height, and it's important in many rescue scenarios to have, to minimize height loss, or, you want to get as much out of the lift as possible, because oftentimes you might be working in a fine space and, just a few inches makes the difference of getting someone easily up over a lip or something like that,
Right.
And also I'll make a plug about our new Perfecto carabiners that are coming out here hopefully in a few weeks they'll be coming out of the factory. But
okay.
It's also a good height, minimize height loss. I think we've shaved off 14 millimeters, just over half an inch on the Ultra O. So you're saving a whole inch if you've got one on either side of a rigging plate. But at any rate, some things I was chatting with one of our, rope access and rescue guys here in Wales, and about perhaps a stretcher, for example, having a wider, like our large bat plate, for example, or extra large bat plate, you would have a connecting the stretcher to the very exterior of the connection holes helps in keeping the stretcher stable.
Right.
Whereas if you had a ring there and you're basically connected to the ring, the stretcher can rotate a lot more easily.
Right.
That kind of thing is something that happens there. And also in the back plate, if you notice that we've got two center apertures that are one on top of each other, that's sort of resemble a large swivel actually, in profile, but they're designed so that they can accommodate more than one connector. Most of the holes in the bat plate are single holes for a carabiner, but those center apertures have the ability to connect more than one connector. So if you're the litter attendant, the stretcher attendant, you're connected in there with two lanyards, for example.
Right.
And as you're shifting around on your lanyards, you're not influencing the stretcher in that case. Basically, they're just swapping positions inside. Your carabiners are swapping positions inside that larger connection. I just wanted to comment on that.
No, that's a and again, that's a great point as far as to consider design and function in the same regard, and how it can really, I guess, make the most efficient outcome in what you're trying to achieve. And like you say, when you talk about rescue, maybe every pool, an efficiency of 14 millimeters at the end of a 100-foot pool might be the difference between success and failure. I don't know, but I guess that's a good way to put it. Is if the design can be more efficient, then the application could certainly be more efficient. And I think that's really a good way to look at successful design. Is does it make using a piece of gear more efficient? That's really great. That's really great insight as well.
Yeah, and that would be mostly when you reach, say you've got a tripod set up over some, confined space cylinder. It's really about, how much height can you get
right
above that, So yeah, that's important. And in that case, really, a swivel, like for example, the large axis swivel.
Right.
You can get three connections in either side, and that's a very compact reading plate if
right.
you look at it that way. So, and plus, if you need to spin things around, you can swivel underneath it. So when you look at, I mentioned earlier, a ring or a swivel makes a great reading plate as well.
Well, and that just a comment too, when you mentioned the access swivel and it being compact, I mean, look at the difference of what a half inch is when you're reaching behind you to tend your prussic. Just you're fully extended, you turn around to tend your prussic, maybe you're on a limb walk or whatever, and you just need a little bit more rope in the system, and if that isn't configured just right, you may have to reposition just to reach back and reach your prussic but dialing in that platform, again, if you consider the bridge swivel as the basis of your platform and you have a certain length hitch that you like to use, and you say, jeepers, I don't want to lose the length on my hitch, but I want to gain the distance somewhere else. Well, maybe you want to look to that platform that you're basing off everything off of, the plate, the swivel, the ring, and say, well, that's the difference of a half inch, or that's the difference of 3/4 of an inch. So how can I reconfigure the gear to keep what I like in the system, but to gain what I'm losing in effectiveness?
Yeah, sure. I mean, really, I think you just need to grow longer arms, TC. You can, and then you can reach all the time.
You know what, Taylor Hamill, you are one of the most loved arborists in America. I can speak for a lot of people when I say that. And Taylor, I just really appreciate you getting in touch with me. This is sort of a homegrown thing, and I'm just really happy that you make the call and you make the effort to get in touch. And I think that. That's a good place to wrap up, and I'm so grateful for your time. I know you're working hard overseas right now, and we're really happy to have you here. And like I said, I'm gonna sign off, and I'll get this up and published and start sharing it and tag you, and look forward to seeing that article in Arb Climber in the coming issues as well.
Cool, man. Thanks a lot. It's great to chat with you. I like what you're doing with the Arb Life. It's great. And on my finishing comment, I want to say, don't use an extra small bat plate on your bridge.
Beautiful. Everyone, you heard it from, as they say, the horse's mouth. Take the bat plates off of your bridges.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could talk about it at the time, but it's not the best thing to put on your bridge.
Maybe another episode, Taylor, we can do, burning bridges, what what goes and what doesn't.
Yeah, awesome.
Hey, thanks so much, Taylor. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
Cool, thanks. See ya.
Bye-bye. I'd like to thank everyone for listening to another edition of the podcast. I encourage you to sign up for an email subscription where you'll get notifications of our latest posts. Visit the online store, purchase a tank top, help us support the website platform financially, because it's the Arb Life, for arborists to be inspired.